I'm Larry Kensington with Classical 88.1's Arts Focus. One of the very best composers and arrangers in the history of jazz is a figure still not as widely known as he deserves to be. He was born here in Dayton in 1915, but grew up in Pittsburgh and spent nearly all his creative life until his death in 1967 working alongside Duke Ellington, really in Ellington's shadow. But Billy Strayhorn, composer of Take the A-Train, Lush Life, and many other jazz staples, is increasingly recognized for his own formidable gifts. Strayhorn is also a hero to jazz enthusiasts in the gay community because he was able to be remarkably open about his sexuality at a time when such openness was not prevalent. Strayhorn's life and legacy are being commemorated in a week-long salute presented by City Folk. Celebrating Billy Strayhorn presents performances by pianist Bill Charlap, trumpeter Terrell Stafford, and the remarkable Stivers High School Jazz Orchestra. There are also two films being shown at the Neon Movies and a live interview at the Loft Theater with Strayhorn biographer David Haydu. City Folk's Dave Barber says the interest in understanding Billy Strayhorn as both composer and man began in the 1980s and 90s.
When Joe Henderson came out in the 90s, early 90s with Lush Life, and Lincoln Center, Wynton Marsalis and the Jazz at Lincoln Center folks started recognizing Strayhorn in the concert hall there, you started to see a more full-blown appreciation of Strayhorn on his own terms. And David Haydu's biography, Lush Life, really sealed it. It was Haydu's book, which had 10 years of work into it, and over 500 interviews were done for that book. That was the first time that folks got a wide view on this incredible life. Mm-hmm. And I think all of that has sort of opened the door to what Billy Strayhorn's music is about.
Right. There are still a lot. I mean, he was a kind of a self-effacing figure. I mean, he preferred to work in the background there and not be in the limelight so much with Ellington and let Ellington take the credit. But I mean, Ellington was the first to acknowledge the worth and the value of Billy Strayhorn and his great gifts.
Well, I think that in Robert Levy's film that we're going to screen at the Neon Movies on the 16th, Gunter Schuller says it best, where he says this is clearly a quid pro quo where Ellington was going to utilize Strayhorn and enhance his own reputation. And Strayhorn was sort of given the keys to live the life he wanted to live on those terms. And I believe it was only later in Strayhorn's career where I think the dissatisfaction on the working arrangement began. And mm-hmm. Haydu talks about that and will be articulating his thoughts on that when he comes to town, but you can find it all in Lush Life.
We wanted to talk about one of the events. The Stivers kids are going to be doing what?
Well, I think this fits into the same realm that we're talking about. There's a Dutch musicologist by the name of Walter Vandeleur who has done what must be described as a Herculean effort in terms of sorting out the printed scores of Duke Ellington and Billy Strayhorn. A lot of what we're learning about Billy Strayhorn is coming from this work that's been done by Vandeleur. Billy Strayhorn Songs, Inc. has provided for the Stivers School for the Arts Jazz Orchestra some of the complete Billy Strayhorn scores that Vandeleur has unearthed. Many times when you're listening to Strayhorn music that Ellington's doing, you're not hearing it in the complete form that Strayhorn originally created it in. Mm-hmm. And these scores, for example, the Stivers kids are playing the complete Anatomy of a Murder, one of the two primary themes from Otto Preminger's movie. Mm-hmm. You'll be able to hear one of the great high school bands in the country playing that score as Strayhorn originally wrote it.
Billy Strayhorn's music continues to be widely recorded and interpreted, and even in classical music circles, too.
Absolutely. And I think that this renaissance that began in the 80s and 90s with Strayhorn's music, I think it's just going to continue. It's absolutely beautiful music.
City Folks Celebrating Billy Strayhorn begins this Saturday, April 11th at 8 p.m. with the Bill Charlap Trio's performance at the Dayton Art Institute. For a complete schedule of events, visit cityfolk.org/celebratingstrayhorn. That's cityfolk.org/celebratingstrayhorn. This is Larry Kensington. Arts Focus is a production of Dayton's Classical 88.1. I'm Larry Kensington with Classical 88.1's Arts Focus. Russia is a very big country with a long, complex history. And sometimes Americans get frustrated trying to understand all that complexity. Robert Alexander, however, is one American who understands Russia very well. Not only has he lived and worked in Russia and learned its language and history, he has written several acclaimed works of historical fiction to make Russia and its history more accessible to American readers. Mr. Alexander's latest historical novel is The Romanov Bride. It tells the story of the turbulent last years of Imperial Russia, largely through the eyes of the Grand Duchess Elizabeth, the sister of Tsarista Alexandra and sister-in-law of Tsar Nicholas II. Mr. Alexander will be in the Dayton area to sign copies of his book next Monday, March 2nd, at Books and Company in Beaver Creek. Robert's interest in all things Russian was sparked by his youthful encounter with a best-selling work all about the Romanovs.
Actually, it began in my high school library. I picked up a book, Nicholas and Alexandra, by Robert Massey. Mm-hmm. And I was so taken by the story of the fall of the Romanovs, the fall of Nicholas and Alexandra, that I started studying Russian history and started studying Russian language. And eventually that led me all the way to Leningrad University. Back in the 70s, I studied there, and then I returned and worked in the Soviet Union for the U.S. government in 1978 as a Russian-speaking guide. And then, you know, kept going back and back, and I've been involved in a business there from 1990 until the present. So, you know, it goes back about 33 years now, and I've seen some incredible changes.
How long does it take you generally to just do the research that's involved in a book like The Romanov Bride before you ever sit down to do the writing or start dreaming up your characters or fleshing them out?
The research takes anywhere from 6 months to 2 years for each of the books. And, you know, The Romanov Bride, I think it took about a year or so. I wanted to try and capture the voice and the of Ella, Alexandra's older sister, as closely as possible. And, of course, that means combing through all of her letters, most of which were written in English, and her correspondence with Nicholas and Alexandra, all of which were written in English as their, you know, primary language. You know, it's great fun, and it's the most absorbing and most interesting part of writing the book, actually.
I've always thought, you know, that the Russian Revolution might have taken a different direction, you know, and that the Bolsheviks may never have come to power, and what would have happened if they didn't. I mean, do you speculate that way, too?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, it was morphing into a constitutional monarchy. Nicholas was absolute monarch, absolute autocrat, until 1905, when that revolution took place, the shooting outside the Winter Palace, Bloody Sunday. And at that, after that, there was a Duma, a parliament of sorts. And still Nicholas pretty much had, you know, was an absolute autocrat. He stood above everything else. Mm-hmm. But it was changing, and it would have changed into a constitutional monarchy given time. And had it not been for the duress of World War I, had the people not been so broken down, I think it would have, you know, in another 8 or 9, 10 years, changed into a government of representation.
I have a question. There must be a balance. I mean, you can't change the fact that Bloody Sunday took place when it did, and so, you know, you keep that, but then you're able to build your story around the facts, right? I mean, your imagination takes over after that, and you can invent episodes.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You know, it's a very good question, and it's a big question in writing historical fiction. You have to, I think, as a writer, I have to find, you know, the framework, the frame of that story. You know all the details. Say Bloody Sunday took place, you know, where it took place, when it took place, what happened, and so on. Mm-hmm. And what I tried to do is recreate a scene to invite the reader into the environment of what it was like so that you get the feel of what it's like to have gone through that. And I think that's the beauty of historical fiction. What you don't want to do is go outside of that framework because it cheats the reader, it ruins the reader. I mean, if you were to write historical fiction about, you know, the assassination of JFK, you couldn't set it in New Orleans. You know, you have to stay within the confines of what is known and then do as much creatively to recreate as accurately as possible what happened.
You can meet author Robert Alexander next Monday evening, March 2nd at 7 o'clock at Books & Company at 4453 Walnut Street at The Green in Beaver Creek. The author has a website that contains detailed information about his work, conveniently called robertalexanderbooks.com. This is Larry Kensington. Arts Focus is a production of Dayton's Classical 88.1.